Each new year brings some ruminations of the just-ended year, the good and the bad, as well as guesses about what the new year may bring. Trends in food are not immune or excepted from this habit, so today's episode is a short romp through some of the lamentable food trends of 2019 and maybe some bright hope for 2020. I also offer my own short list of activities we should strive to reach, regardless the trends favoring us with delight or saddening us with failure. Grab a cuppa and hang out for half an hour or so. The Culinary Libertarian Podcast, episode 68.
Yo, welcome to the Culinary Libertarian Podcast, where the philosophy's free, but the food's on you.
Hello, folks. Welcome back to the podcast. Happy New Year. Happy to be here. Happy to have you here. Surf your web browser over to culinarylibertarian.com/podcasts to find all the previous episodes, as well as some of my affiliate banners for your brain food or baking skills. Both the Tom Woods Liberty Classroom and McClanahan Academy offer courses on history, and Liberty Classroom also has courses on politics, science fiction and dystopia, economics, and logic, to name just a few. Both McClanahan Academy and Liberty Classroom courses are portable, which means you can listen from your phone, in your car on the way to work, or in your kitchen from your tablet or computer while you're making dinner. Check out the Liberty Classroom Master Membership, which includes all the content now published, as well as all the future courses to be published. If your preferences run more toward what you can make and bake with your hands, Kiko's Cakes is an excellent video source for how to make amazing cakes and torts and desserts in your kitchen. Kiko's recipes work, and that's worth mentioning because many times some of them don't. His instruction will get you where you want to be. Click through on those banners to learn more. You can also support the show with a few clicks of the mouse on your favorite podcatcher by leaving a rating and a review of the show. It's a solo episode today, and we're doing a little culinary review of some of the food trends, not all of them, because, you know, can't do that. And then a little bit of looking into what's coming, and then some of my own thoughts about what should be on the horizon instead of what prognosticators think will be on the horizon. Food and Wine magazine publishes a food trends piece every year. Every year, they ask a select group of chefs what will be the trends this year and what's run its course from last year. Chefs are not known, in my experience, for their skills of prognostication. Asking chefs this year what will be hot next year and then being amazed that they were right when that is what they planned to serve is to be surprised that the guy in the pool says the water's fine. Predicting the future by knowing your next move is hardly amazing. That aside, the article from foodandwine.com reads, in part, quote, "As we wrap up the decade and look forward to 2020, we asked celebrated chefs and industry experts to predict what's next. The 34 chefs we spoke with are forecasting sherry, sustainable seafood, smoked everything, and lots of bread, and so much more. Below, check out the 22 trends that will dominate kitchens, bars, and restaurants next year," end quote. I'll put the link to this article on the show notes page, culinarylibertarian.com/68. Before I mention some of the ideas about what's to come, I want to first go over what some said was so bad in 2019 that it needs to stay dead, never to be revived for any reason. That's not my passion, but the writers of the piece, The Worst Food Trends of 2019, which will also be linked on the show notes page. Charcoal was a thing in food to eat. I've seen it in dog biscuits to control flatulence, and I think folks who need a real detox might ingest charcoal, willingly or not, to absorb the toxins. Elsewise, it seems a bit more nature than I prefer. We can probably add stabbing someone for a sandwich as a good thing to stop doing. Okay, maybe a braised short rib sandwich on brioche with homemade coleslaw and homemade pickles and homemade mustard, and maybe an argument can be made. Nah, no, of course it can't be, but at least one could understand for such a sandwich and an impassioned display. But for Popeyes, I struggle with that one. One trend I certainly agree with is condiment mashups. Ranch and ketchup together to make cranch and oh so many more were a horror from the start. There were, maybe there still are, more than a few, and they're all terrible. Make your own. Make fry sauce. Blend ranch, which you've made, with ketchup, which you probably didn't, if that's what you want. Aside from the basics, mayo, mustard, ketchup, we don't need centralization of condiment mixing. My own personal item, well, really personal item, is the tweezers and placing of microgreens. Ugh, make it stop. I worked for a certified master chef who was both very adept with food and words. Jack Shoup could string together some doozies. it's not for a family show. But such activity, carefully and artfully and woefully, painfully, agonizingly detailed placing of lavender flowers at every second of a clock face would earn an expletive of stop finger-ing the food. That wasn't his own phrase, but it was plain what he meant. Also, on my own list is the processed foods. It seems there is more, and that it has soybean oil or canola oil or something else we can't grow, pick, or pronounce. Blue raspberry? What is that? Stop it! Before I talk about what to look forward to, let's take a minute for a word from my sponsor. Hey folks, if you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me tell you why. It's free. Free is good. They have creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or your computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you, so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, CastBox, and many more. You can make money from your podcast with sponsors, just like this one, with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. And if you use your phone, you can be podcast on the spot, getting news and interesting things, whatever appeals to you, wherever you are. Download the free app to your phone or go to anchor.fm to get started creating your podcast today. You've listened to The World on Podcasts. Now go tell the world your story. Visit anchor.fm today to get started. Now let's get back into the show. Food trends to look forward to, or what the chefs plan to make in 2020. That means the chefs asked, probably told, what they plan to pursue in 2020. I also don't think they gave such questions any real consideration. Some of the best ideas in food are found while looking for something else, so how could anyone seriously answer such a question? But ink is good, so they provided an answer. According to the Business Insider website, carambola and squid ink pasta are popular. The 1980s called, and they want the star fruit back. Carambola are cute, They are almost never ripe, and therefore it's as tart as can be. Even the best. Fresh off the tree, near Naples, Florida, I found them far more fun to see than to eat. Squidding pasta leaves a similar impression, but that's something we're told we can look forward to. Whee! They identify keto foods as a big area for growth. I tend to think that is right, and as keto finds its footing outside of mountains of eggs and meat, not that there's anything wrong with that, a diversity of foods in the keto wheelhouse seems a good way to bring more people in. Even if you're not a both-feed-in kind of a person, getting off processed foods is a great start to better health. One item they predict to grow in popularity, if at least for the unconventional use, is cauliflower. Now, I like cauliflower, but I never had it better than at a pizza place in Orlando. I don't remember the name of the joint, but they served a pie with a half a head of cauliflower, all breadcrumbed up and crispy. On that pizza, it was incredible. I'm kind of ashamed to say I pretty much ate the whole thing by myself, and that's kind of obscene. But it's been 5 or 6 years, and I still remember it. Business Insider sees cauliflower crust as a thing, and I've never tried that, and I've thought about it, but I'm sticking to my bread. In with the keto mindset is bone broth, which, as a phrase, annoys the tuna salad out of me. Bones make stock, and meat makes broth. I suppose broth has a more grandma homespun feel than the clinical sounding stock. A well-made stock, bone broth is truly an amazing thing. With some garnishes, it's a soup. And twist on that and you can make pho, which is on the list of big trends or continuing trends in 2020. One item on the list for continued growth is the Impossible Burger. And from the shelf space allotted that brand, my local grocery store, the jury in my town has voted no. No, thank you. The shelf space was at least 5 feet wide, and every shelf in the meat section bumped out the chicken selections that I preferred. In less than 2 months, that 5 feet of shelves has diminished to 2 package wide space on the shelves. Cold brewed coffee seems a possible big deal, and so too oat milk and oat milk lattes. Cold brew coffee is actually pretty good. I found the tasting notes to be much closer to what the producer suggested, less bitterness, and I like bitterness, and a fine balance. Cold brew, good cold brew, is worth finding. I'll take it full fat in mind, thanks. It is possible to make oat milk at home. But why? Process of making oat milk at home reads like more effort than I wish to perform for a product I don't prefer to consume. Whole Foods Market has a list. The first item is foods farmed in a process called regenerative agriculture. According to one site I read, regenerationinternational.org, they have a paragraph which reads, quote, specifically, regenerative agriculture is a holistic land management practice that leverages the power of photosynthesis in plants to close the carbon cycle and build soil health, crop resilience, and nutrient density. Regenerative agriculture improves soil health primarily through the practices that increase soil organic matter. This not only aids in increasing soil biota diversity and health, but increases biodiversity both above and below the soil surface, while increasing both water holding capacity and sequestering carbon at greater depths, thus drawing down climate-damaging levels of atmospheric CO2 and improving soil structure to reverse civilization-threatening human-caused soil loss. Research continues to reveal the damaging effects to soil from tillage, applications of agricultural chemicals, and salt-based fertilizers, and carbon mining. Regenerative agriculture reverses this paradigm to build for the future, end quote. I realize that publications have to read like a master's or PhD thesis, but good grief. That means farming the right way. My own personal giggle was had at the need for cow manure, which, for all the blabber of the Green New Deal, will certainly flummox the farming part. Any delay in the central planners planning anything is a good delay. And the soil health is exactly what John Moody discussed on his visit in episode 42. All that reads like farming the way Grandpa farmed. How curious we are finding a resurgence in pickling and home cooking and processing and a return to better farming practices. What's old is new again. Those are trends I can get behind, for they are not trendy at all. The give and take of sound farming and preserving the harvest is as old as humanity, more or less, and that's another episode. Kale seems to be in, still, or returning, depending on who offers the opinion. I've enjoyed it well braised with veal breast, but was never going to make everything possible with it. I far prefer the dandelions from my front yard. Brussels sprouts are back too, but in this house, they were never gone. Loads of bacon and yum, yum, yum. Michael Pollan might be credited with reintroducing the idea of eat as your grandparents ate. The keto folks and attentive eaters know that foods as close as possible to its original form are better. I dare suggest that even the keto folks would grant an apple is superior to applesauce, even if the apple itself might be high in carbs in a relative sense. The nutrients which are destroyed in the processing are worth getting. The process of digesting that whole food makes the glucose absorption take longer than the almost instant injection of sugar from a puree. Food trends might be fun for a night out, but I don't think food trends are a way to build a healthy lifestyle. Protein shakes are likely to see no decrease in popularity, but what the heck is in them? They are sure to be expensive per package, but are they better than a couple of eggs for breakfast? Eggs you probably already have at home. You probably have cheese and bacon and onions. Saute all those things together with some eggs, and that's a fine breakfast. Now, I don't begrudge the company wanting to make a buck, but what's in that shake that you can't get and need from home? A trend, I use that term to be consistent with the theme, is more a series of preferences and choices. Find your local farmers. Local might mean your town, might mean your county, or even your state or your tri-state area. But in New York, local does not mean Texas or Oregon. The choice to eat as Granny did, avoiding as a standard the packaged convenience of consumables, saves you currency, reduces the crap in your trash bins, and allows you to slow down enough to attend to yourself. So my prognostication is an increased awareness of what we eat and from where it came. There are lots of reasons to avoid meat from your grocery store and find a farmer or at least a butcher. Butcher shops will have a stronger connection to their source of meats and know more about how that meat was raised than the lab coat clad person filling the meat case with plastic wrapped styrofoam platters of meat fed something which came from somewhere and labeling. Well, that's also another show. Congress has done you no service at all with what's allowable on a label. Canning foods, pickles, mustards, putting up the harvest for winter is looking up. I see friends on Facebook posting more of their bounty. Vinegars and mustards should increase in production. That's not a prediction, that's an urgent request. Whole grain mustards are pretty easy to make. Vinegars can be a bit more of a challenge, but are well worth doing, for the flavor is amazing, and the elimination of all the junk as an ingredient that you don't see is to your betterment. I'm not saying become a homesteader, at least not this year. I am saying growing a garden of herbs and tomatoes, or finding ways to eliminate the barriers between you and your food, is a good step. I am saying attend more to what you choose to consume and work to make better food choices. Your body and your health will thank you. And that's the didactic for the new year. Attend to yourself. Forget presidential politics. They don't care about you, the individual you. That's your job, and no one on TV will do that job better for you than you. All right, go forth, cook, bake, eat, grow. Have a fabulous new year, and I'll see you next week. All right, folks, that's going to do it. On today's show notes page, culinarylibertarian.com/68, I'll leave links for a couple of books. One of them is called Lost Arts, a celebration of culinary traditions, which is a good narrative and has some recipes. Another book, Mustards, Ketchups, and Vinegars, is a nice collection of easy-to-make recipes for mustards, ketchups, and vinegars. The tarragon whole grain mustard and the cranberry ketchup are both, oh man, those are great. And I know it's late, you know, for the cranberry ketchup, but you can still get them in the store. It's not just for turkey, but boy howdy, it's going to be great at Thanksgiving, but really it's good all year round, especially on, you know, venison or wild boar. Have a great beginning to your 2020, and I will see you again soon. Music for the Culinary Libertarian Podcast is provided by Matthew Bankert at mattbankert.com.